there really is progress on issues like FOIA, even in some areas related to national security. Actually, the parts that aren't quantitative, there have been some amazing things in the last year in terms of national security openness. The release, you know, of the nuclear posture review and the intelligence budget, the national intelligence budget. This is really unprecedented. And even in terms of the numbers, there's some good news and then there's some bad news. Some of the surprises from last year are the increase in the number of national security letters. The classification numbers keep going up and the declassification just kind of hovers around the same volume that it's been for a long time. One of the other differences that I think is noteworthy, although we're not sure quite what to make of it, is that the number of challenges by people inside the government to classifications has really increased. It's doubled in the last year. However, the bad news is that most of those challenges have not been successful. Only 16% of the time has that information been declassified, either in part or in full. So that's pretty small.
Let's talk a little bit more about some of the newly unprecedented things, like the revelations of the intelligence budgets. How much useful information is actually in there? What does it tell us when we know basically a top line number for the military intelligence spending and the other intelligence spending?
Well, I think it starts to tell us where the priorities of our government are to help to make informed decisions about where our priorities should be and where our money should be going. Of course, you know, these are very, very high-level abstract numbers. It's no detail, and we're not going to get the detail. But it does provide us some basic framework for beginning to understand better.
It's better than nothing.
Better than nothing, certainly better. And it's better than what we have had. Doing it proactively, it's, I think, a big step in the right direction. It shows that not just the rhetoric, but the follow-through of the administration in those areas where they can control the civil service and the bureaucracy, that they really do mean what they're saying.
Let's talk about FOIA a little bit. You find some positive trends. The backlog is shrinking, but you spend a good deal of time as well talking about the frustration that FOIA requesters have with just not knowing where they are in the process.
Sure.
Talk about that problem.
Well, I think, you know, it's an ongoing and difficult problem for requesters. Part of it has to do with, you know, knowing what to ask for and knowing how the government organizes itself and who's likely to have information. And then I think it's knowing how to craft a request so that it becomes as much as possible what the government considers a simple request, a request that doesn't require, you know, a tremendous amount of their time and doesn't require referral to other agencies. Now, a lot of times the information that people want to know is going to require referral to other agencies and all. But for the average member of the public, probably a properly crafted FOIA request doesn't need to be that complex. And so the numbers that we have in here from working with Muckrock, who, you know, gathers information and user perspectives on this, say that, you know, it's a very frustrating thing, and there's a wide variation even within agencies in terms of how they understand a simple or a complex request and how long it takes. What's the difference in time that a complex request you could expect to wait before you get a response to that? And I think one of the lessons out of it is persistence. One of the things that FOIA officials in the government, in the Department of Justice, have said is that they're very surprised by how rarely requesters appeal when they're turned down. And actually, when requesters appeal, more often than not, they get at least some of the information that they were requesting in the first place. So I think, you know, there were the two examples of a requester who sort of just walked away and one who was more persistent, and the one more persistent one ended up getting a fair amount of the information. And I think there's a lesson there that you just have to stay on it, and maybe it's sort of like the insurance companies who turn you down the first time. I'm not saying the government agencies routinely do that, but the process of making them go back and look again at what you've asked for and look again. And it's oftentimes somebody else that's looking at it the second time, a different person, to take a second look and say, oh, you know, there's really not a good reason to withhold all of this, maybe just this portion. And of course, the government has a responsibility to reach out to requesters to pick up the phone and help them narrow down their request so that it does fall within the realm of what they consider a simple request and has a better chance of being answered on a timely basis.
In that case that you just mentioned with two requesters asking for the same information, one was more persistent, one was less persistent, that was, I believe, a Justice Department request. And you found that in the first case, DOJ told the less persistent requester that the information simply didn't exist. Is there any indication that agencies are doing that broadly, just saying, nope, we don't have this, we don't have anything responsive to your request, hoping that they'll just go away?
Well, I think part of the problem with DOJ and with a number of agencies is where there are records that have to do with ongoing investigations, the government agencies will often say, rather than saying, you know, we're withholding records because they're law enforcement sensitive or something like that, they will just say we don't have, you know, there are no records. And, you know, That is a real problem. I think it's primarily the ones that do, you know, various kinds of investigations. And I think it's a shorthand and maybe sometimes a lazy, but at least a shorthand way of trying to figure out how to meet the requirements of the FOIA without letting somebody who's under investigation know that they're under investigation. So there are competing interests and competing values there, so I think the difference might be the time frame. When the person went back, it's possible that the investigation was closed and therefore they could release them, whereas before they couldn't, or that they decided that was not an appropriate, you know, somebody else looking at it decided that was not an appropriate response.
Let's get into classification and overclassification a little
sure.
bit. The fundamental classification guidance review, that was in 2009, in which the president told agencies to go out and find classification criteria that's obsolete or no longer relevant.
Right.
You say agencies need to understand that this review is not optional. I mean,
right.
What evidence do we have that agencies aren't taking this as seriously as
well,
they need to?
The Secrecy Project at the Federation of American Scientists, Steve Astergood's work, did a survey out to the agencies that are supposed to be doing this and found that, you know, a few have taken it seriously and some are just ignoring it. Some want to think that it doesn't apply to them. And, you know, the White House, through the Information Security Oversight Office, has gone back out to the agencies and said, no, you know, really, we mean this. And, you know, they've still not gotten a lot of response. So, I'm not sure the reason. I know that in the past, sometimes agencies have tried to ride out a presidency. I think if they just sit on their thumbs long enough that, you know, these guys will go away. I don't know if that's what's going on here, but it's like some of the agencies have said, we're just fine. Our guidance is just fine, even though it hasn't been updated in the last two or three presidencies, which means that the last two or three changes to executive orders, they've not bothered to look at it and to see what needs to be changed from Clinton to G.W. Bush to Obama. Certainly between Clinton and Bush and then Bush and Obama, there are significant changes that should have been reflected in their guidance.
Also in the area of classification and declassification, you've found that the people with original classification authority, the people who actually
mm-hmm.
have the stamps on their desk, that
mm-hmm.
number went down, but the number of new classifications actually went up in 2010.
Right.
How do you square that? Can you square that?
No. I mean, that's disturbing, actually, that there are, with fewer people marking them, that there are more things being marked as secret at one level or another. And I think, you know, the WikiLeaks disclosures show us, at least to some extent, some of what gets marked, you know, confidential on up is marked that way more to prevent embarrassment or to hide policy debates rather than to protect information that really does need to be protected. Of course, having said that, the recent disclosures show that there are also real names of individuals that have cooperated with the government or are informers or are whistleblowers that really do need to be protected. So, it's both and. But I think the inclination of a lot of the national security bureaucracy is still, when in doubt, to stamp it, secret.
You mentioned WikiLeaks. I wonder if that has had an effect on the mindset of whether or not someone decides to classify something secret or top secret. In other words, might someone with original classification authority err on the side of classifying things and trying to protect them?
Well, that's a real possibility. I mean, it kind of cuts both ways. I think the government has reacted very, very strongly to the releases, but I think it has also come to understand that the government is exposed for overclassifying information. The other thing, that it has been suggested might make people more likely to classify, although it's then very, very difficult to share information, is the going away of markings like sensitive but unclassified. There's a whole new controlled unclassified information registry being developed, and it's going to limit the ability of agencies to do these junk markings on things for official use only and your eyes only and all of those things that have no basis in law. And some people have speculated that that could lead to an increase in classification. But again, that makes it much more difficult for agencies to share information with one another and to share it out with first responders and governors and all of those people that they need to share information with, but also to do the information sharing inside the government that, we learned was so important and so difficult for agencies to do.
To bring us around to the bigger picture, the Open Government Directive the president issued in 2009, you say most agencies did a good job of quickly putting together their plans to become more open and invite public participation in their processes. But you say agencies still need more direction, more support from the administration to become more open. What should the White House be doing in that vein, in your view?
Well, I think the White House is working internally with agencies. We don't know all of what's happening. They have an ongoing interagency working group that's like 50 or more individuals that, still they have 50 or more individuals who actually show up for the meetings, which is almost unheard of. But I think that what we're not seeing from the outside, I mean, agencies are putting up a lot of data. What we're not seeing from our perspective is more transparency on policy sorts of things. So, they're not putting up the calendars of policymaking officials, not just the top secretaries. They're not putting up their own visitor logs. They're not putting up as much detail about contracts as they should be. They're not doing good records management, which was part one of the things in the directive. They're not moving ahead in the ways that they should be with declassification. And those are the things that, data is relatively easy to put up, and it's relatively easy for the agency to decide among their databases, what to put out there or to put on data.gov. The policy stuff is a lot harder, and it exposes the agency more to real accountability sorts of questions. So we would like to see, the White House push the agencies more and also follow up with them more. During Sunshine Week this year, they told agencies to put up directories, interactive organizational charts, and their congressional correspondence and several things. And we went back in July, early August, and most of the agencies, if they had done anything, it was very, very hard to find on their sites. And most of them hadn't even done these minimal sorts of things because nobody's looking over their shoulder, holding their feet to the fire. And the White House, in its defense, has a lot on its plate. But if they're going to put out this directive and tout the agencies and tout their administration as being committed to openness, then, they have to put the resources behind that. And I think, the cuts that Congress wants to make in the budget for open government initiatives is also problematic. But, you know, if this is a priority for them, then they need to figure out how to make the agencies actually be really open to the public, make information on their sites easy to find, and really look at ways of doing real collaboration with the public, not just one-way blogs that they put out information, you send them a response, and that's the end of it, which unfortunately is kind of how the White House operates, too.
Last thing I'll ask you is a little bit more about the budget issues. It's impossible to talk about anything in this town at the moment without talking about the budget battles.
Sure.
But, you know, it seems to me that there are, you know, sort of countervailing forces in that. You know, we have heard about things like cuts to the eGov fund, et cetera.
Right.
But at the same time, it seems to me like Congress would want to, at this particular moment, have as much insight as it can into the inner workings of agencies and where money is going. Which direction do you think that cuts right now?
Well, the things that the administration has said, you know, they're not going to be able to do as much as they would like to are those sorts of things that show where the agency, you know, performance.gov and some of the things that show where the money is going and how agencies are spending. You know, so I don't understand the folks in Congress who both want to hold government accountable, hold the executive branch accountable, and also then want to starve the executive branch to death. Even if you want a smaller government, you still want to be able to know what it's doing and how it's operating and in whose interests it's operating. And you can't do that without the software and the programs and all of that that provide that information. If you rely on, you know, FOIA or responses to congressional demands, it's going to overwhelm the system, and it's going to mean the information is really not generally available to the public, who is really should be the end beneficiary of this, not just congressional offices.